thank you for coming to this breakout session about being a man of God to your grandkids. I can't speak from a lot of experience on that just yet, but I'm here hoping to pick up some tips from a man that is there. So would you please welcome Philip Gerber.
Thank you.
So tell us, Philip, why would you be qualified to speak on this topic?
There are three qualifications. The first one is that I have 11 grandkids. The second one is that I was unfortunate enough to bump into Phil Bassett at a social function a couple of months ago, and he said, would you like to do a tour? And I think the third one is, on a more serious note, is that, you know, as a Christian man, as a person who follows Christ, you know, I do, and I hope we all do, try and work out how you do these things Christianly. I mean, you do them anyway, but there's just an extra dimension when you're trying to serve God in your various roles. And, you know, this whole conference talks about it in work and in your relationship with husband and wife and so on. So, yeah, they're probably my three qualifications.
Perfect. Tell us a bit about your professional background. Where do you work and what are you doing at the moment?
My dear sainted mother went to her grave thinking that I played piano in the local hotel because I didn't have the heart to tell her that I was really a lawyer. That's not true, but anyway. Yeah, I'm a lawyer by background. Sort of went into that, for like many lawyers, because I couldn't do maths and science. I've had about three parts to my lawyer's career. I did about 10 years in the public service, studied part-time, then about 10 years in sort of litigation and as a barrister. Then I did about 10 years in professional standards, working for the Diocese of Sydney. Then I did a short period up in Darwin working for the Anglican Church sent up there by the Church Missionary Society. And now I'm back. Things go around, they come around, and I'm back doing professional standards work in a legal context, in a practice and acting, going forward, acting actually for a number of Anglican and other Christian organisations in their professional standards area. So that's professional standards, and it often, unsadly, relates to child protection and those sort of issues, yeah. Child abuse.
A lawyer? Mm-hmm. Well, there's grace abounds. You're welcome here, brother. I also understand you've done quite a bit of ministry work. Tell us about theology training and some lecturing as well that I understand you've given.
Yeah, Brent's been the subject of... I did the standard thing, which I really enjoyed, but I took a long time to do it. I think I took about 10 years to do the Moore College diploma, the external studies diploma in biblical studies. I started with my wife and she finished it in 4 years, and 6 years later I managed to finally finish it. And one particular area that I was interested in was church history. And I ended up teaching that as a subject at Diploma of Biblical Studies. That was Australian church history in particular, because it does tie in to lots of interests I have in terms of law and so on. And as far as other ministry goes, I've just done the normal run of things. I've usually tried to involve myself either as an attendee or in some cases as the sort of kick it along sort of person or coordinator in men's ministry in various parishes that I've been in. I've been to pretty much every Katoomba convention, men's convention that there has been, except one or two when I was in Darwin. I've been to these men's conventions back in the day when we were Tyndale. Was Tyndale the first place we had them at? I've always just been a consumer in these men's conventions, and I've got to tell you, all the people that I'm meeting, they're all looking so old. What is happening to you? I don't think I'm looking old.
Thanks, Philip. Let me pray and we'll get started. Heavenly Father, we thank you for all that you are and for everything that you have given for us and for creation. Help us in this session and today to understand who we are as children of God, saved by grace. And right now, as we hear about being, for most of us, older men, relating to our kids and grandkids, would you guide us and give us wisdom to know how to raise them in a way that is honouring to you. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Over to you.
I thought it might be helpful to start with something out of the Bible. And I didn't think you could go past Psalm 128. I mean, you could go to case studies like the patriarchs and Abraham and those sort of people when you're thinking about grandfathers. But I thought that Psalm 128 was a really good starting point because it actually goes right to the point. So let me read it to you. I'm reading from the English Standard Version. And I thought just for the exercise, when I've done that, I might read it in another version too, still in English. Psalm 128. Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. You shall eat the fruit of the labour of your hands. You shall be blessed, and it shall be well with you. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children will be like olive shoots around your table. Behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. The Lord blesses you from Zion. May you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. May you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel. Just let me read it in the contemporary English version, and I've just found over the last couple of years, I'm not a theologian, so I can't vouch for the translational accuracy of the contemporary English version. However, I do find it helpful to read it in a version which tries to put it in very plain. Someone called it Bart Simpson type English. So, and the experience I had out of that was that when I was in Darwin, I tried to get on top of Creole, which is the Aboriginal language in parts of Arnhem Land, which is a mixture of English and sort of pidgin English and using some of the forms of their local languages. And then eventually it becomes a language because it sort of passes down through generations. And it picks up a lot of the sort of idiomatic English that, you know, rough farm workers and the English speakers that they met, picks up their idioms and just uses them. And then when they translate that into a Bible version, it's really refreshing to hear it not in sort of high English from Shakespeare or something, but in really earthy, gutsy, you know, blackfella type language. And even that term blackfella, you know, it's quite an earthy way of describing, but that's how they describe. So let's look at it in contemporary English. The Lord will bless you if you respect him and obey his laws. Your fields will produce and you will be happy and all will go well. Your wife will be as fruitful as a grapevine, and just as an olive leaf tree is rich with olives, your home will be rich with healthy children. This is how the Lord will bless everyone who respects him. I pray that the Lord will bless you from Zion and let Jerusalem prosper as long as you live. May you live long enough to see your grandchildren. Let's pray for the peace in Israel. Well, you'll see there's an outline that's been printed in the conference booklet, and I'm sort of going to follow that. And I think the first thing that we do get from this passage is that there is fruit from faith. And I'm sure you've all heard sermons about which comes first, faith or works, and can you be saved without works, and do you have to just have faith? And we've all, I think, got a fairly solid understanding from trying to pull together the passages out of James and the passages in other epistles that faith, we're saved by faith, we're saved through faith, and then you take the James passages and works ensue from that, which is evidence of your faith. And I think this passage sort of picks up on that, because it's saying the Lord will bless you if you respect him and obey his laws. And it very quickly starts to apply that to a person's personal situation. One of the things, sadly, that you do as a lawyer is you have people consult you about family law matters. And it does seem to me when you do, I don't do a lot of that now, but I do still occasionally, and just the other day I had someone consult me who's going through what may end up being a marriage breakdown and may need family law advice. And it did seem to me, talking to this person, that a lot of what was happening in that marriage wasn't happening because of what's happened in the last 6 months or the last 3 months or even the last couple of years. It was clearly, and this is sort of stating the obvious, but it was clearly a whole lot of decisions that were made, both by the person and their spouse, over a long period of time, which has ended up in quite a difficult situation for them, possibly a marriage breakup. And there's children involved in the whole shooting match and the whole disaster. And I think we get from this passage that that following the Lord, respecting him and obeying his laws, it's not about winning his favour, it's about cause and effect. That when we follow in God's ways, I think a number of the speakers today have talked about, you know, we were made for Jesus. It was, I think, the way Mark Thompson put it. When we're sort of getting aligned with that, the outcome, according to this, is that our fields will produce, we will be happy, and more importantly for the context we're talking about, your wife will be fruitful, just as an olive tree, your home will be rich with healthy children. And so I suppose my first point is that respecting and obeying God's laws and God's ways, and I'm using laws, it's an unfortunate word because it sounds like obeying his rules is what it's all about. I'm not talking about that. It's really talking about fitting in with God's plan becomes fruitful in the sense that it has effects on our wives, it has effects on our children, and it has effects on our grandchildren. So I suppose that's the first point. Then the second point is that families, quite clearly from this and from lots of other passages, clearly God puts us into families with wives, with children, and with grandchildren. And I think, and I'm not a social commentator, but I don't think it's needing to be a social commentator to observe that in our secular Western humanist, materialistic, hedonistic, individualistic society that we live in, that's Sydney, Australia, we really sometimes forget that. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons, all those reasons I've talked about, the way we're structured, the pressure we're under economically and financially, and we forget that actually we belong in families. And it's interesting when you go to other cultures, and I would suggest probably most other cultures except Western cultures, European, Western, American, the white Western cultures, all other cultures, it's completely different. And so, I mean, I can only speak for the other cultures that I've come across. When you go to Aboriginal cultures in the remote villages in Arnhem Land, actually, the first and most important thing that you want to tell people about yourself is where you fit into in a family. And the obverse is true too. The first thing they want to know about you is where you fit into in a family. You know, you turn up at a remote Arnhem Land community, and they really don't want to know that you're a lawyer, or what job you've got, or what you own, or even what organisation you come from, or who you represent, or what you believe, or anything like that. Actually, what they want to know is, where do you fit into in your family? Do you have children? Do you have a spouse? Do you have grandchildren? Do you have aunts and aunties? And when you start talking about those things, they want to know that, not just so they get that information. It's not about that. It's they want to sort of make you fit into their world view, which is that everybody fits into a family. And I think this passage, I think that's God's plan, and I think this passage reflects that. And I think we've lost, to a large extent, lose that in our Western culture. Do people think that's a fair comment of our culture, of our own culture? Yeah, so in India and in other places where you go where they're not Western, and that they haven't had the long history of individualism ingrained into their culture, I think in many, many of cultures, except probably for our culture, that's where they come from. And that's not an accident. It's God's design. So we need to recognise that. And so we need to recognise that in our role as grandfathers, we fit into it. This is a little bit off on a tangent, but I know my wife's dear old auntie, who was a single lady and is now well into her 80s and is sort of in a nursing home and getting into dementia. It seems that the thing that really helps her to be at peace is to see pictures of her nieces and nephews and her grandnieces and nephews, and sort of realise that she fits into that matrix. You know, she's not just an individual. You know, she's never had a spouse because she's never married. She had a mother, but the mother died a couple of decades ago. And having the pictures of the children and grandchildren like my children and grandchildren, her nieces and nephews and great-nieces and great-nephews, actually gives her a lot of peace, and she actually spends a lot of time looking at them, and she asks us questions about, can you send me other photos that do certain, like, can you get photos of where because she's got some photos of just the children from each family, and she says, well, can you get me some photos with the children and their parents, because she needs to fit together where they fit in her. And that's not about working out where they fit, it's actually working out where she fits, who she is, and you know, her essence of being. And I think that's just another example of and I'm leading towards something in terms of our role as grandparents. There was an attempt to, when we talked about this, when I was asked to do this talk, we did talk about trying to open this out a bit wider to how you would relate to people that aren't your children, but you're related to, so uncles relating to their nieces and nephews. Can I just tell you one very quick anecdote? I was made a godfather of one of my nephews. I have 24 or 25 nieces and nephews because my father had 8 kids. And one of them, I was asked to be the godfather of this young man. Well, he wasn't a young man when I was asked to be the godfather. He was just a baby. And I don't say this to boast, but it had been ingrained in me that the role of a godfather, a godparent, or in my case a godfather, was to take an interest in his spiritual future. And so I got a little card from the minister at the baptism. His parents were Christian, but my brother and my sister-in-law were actually out of the country for a long time on work as expats. And in fact, he came to this school. And I didn't have a lot to do with him, but I did, just from time to time, with this little card in the back of my Bible, pray for him that God would have his hand on him and so on. And in a miraculous way, not really miraculous, but from a human point of view, a miraculous way, he came to faith through a girl that he was sweet on, who said, why would I have anything to do with you if you weren't a Christian? And he, whoa, what's that all about? And he explored Christianity and was converted, became a Christian. He's an incredibly strong leader in his local church, and his wife is too, and their family's great. And I sort of think, well, God just used me in a very small way as an uncle and as a godfather to just bring him before the Lord. I'm not necessarily saying that there was cause and effect between that, but I think that just is another example of how uncles, I kept in touch with him from time to time, but not very regularly, just because of circumstances. But that was one way that God was able to use me as an uncle. So if you're an uncle, and that's what you're thinking about, one thing you can always do is pray for your nieces and nephews. And that will, I'll come back to that in relation to being a grandfather. Then the next thing is, families are part of God's good plan. The next thing is, you actually have to sow the seeds to be a grandfather. My mother, who didn't think I played piano in the local hotel, she didn't know I was a lawyer, she used to say to me, and it was a bit of a mantra and a little bit of a truism, but there was a lot of wisdom in it. She used to say to me as a kid and as a teenager, I don't care who you marry, so long as she's a Christian. And that was really drummed into me. She's a wonderful Christian woman, not perfect by any means, but a wonderful Christian woman. And she could see that actually, in terms of my development and my future as a Christian and as a human being, the best thing I could do would be to marry a Christian. And I took that on board, so I went along to, I don't know if people remember the Christian Youth Tours Association, who remembers that? Yeah. They used to have tours on long weekends and so on, and I sort of thought, well, I certainly want to meet a good sort, someone who I can relate to and who's good looking and who I like and who I get on with and so on and so forth, but she's got to be a Christian. So I remember going through this thought process as an older teenager, thinking, well, if Mum's right, there are two things that I need to do, and one of them is to go where the Christian girls are. If I go to the local nightclub or the local pub, yes, I might meet a Christian, but the odds are that I won't. I'm more likely to meet them at Christian Youth Tour Association. So that's what I did. And I've got to tell you, the strategy actually worked because I did meet. The other thing was that I had the good opportunity to... one tour I was on was cancelled, and the people from the office rang me up and said, where are you... we've cancelled this particular tour. Do you want to go on the mystery tour instead? And I not really. But, and then I thought, hang on, I said, how many girls are there on that tour? And he said, oh, she said, oh, there's about 20 girls and 5 guys. I'll be in that one. You know, so if you're an average sort of bloke, that was the second thing I did. I sort of thought in Christian circles, the odds, if you're just an average sort of bloke, are usually in your favour. So there you go. And as I say, it did work, it did work. Met a lovely Christian woman. And the reason I tell that story is that actually, to be a good grandparent, part of laying the foundation, and this is probably not relevant to all of us, to most of us anymore, because we've left our run too late, but part of it is making sure that for your children, so therefore for your grandchildren, you actually have a spouse who is at one mind with you, and therefore you're on the same track in terms of what you want for your children. The other part of that is, what can you do for your children and your grandchildren? At a practical level, when they're little, they need to know, both your children and your grandchildren, they need to know that the things of God, the Bible, going to church and meeting with other Christians are the things that are really important. And the only way that they're going to know that is if that's what you do. If you go off on weekends to your weekender away or play football on a Sunday, but tell your kids, look, we're doing that, but what's really important is that the things of God and the things of Christ and so on, they won't pick it up. But if for the whole of their life they see you in church every Sunday, well, not every single Sunday, but you know, as often as you can be, they'll get the message, particularly as little kids. So that's the first thing, that you actually show them by example. The second thing is, and I'm not a great person of prayer, I've got to tell you this, but whenever I did pray for my children, and whenever I pray for my grandchildren, which unfortunately is not often enough, I only pray two things for them. I think back to what my mother said, so that's the one thing I pray for them. I pray that that they will find a Christian spouse if they get married, because that does seem to be the key to for many people. It's not a guarantee, it's not an ironclad guarantee, but it is a key factor in people staying with the things of Christ and continuing to be followers of Christ. And the other thing I pray for them is that they, as they get older, gradually find themselves in church, or sorry, I shouldn't say church because it's not about church, but meeting with other Christians. And that becomes really crucial, and we observe this with our own children when they're teenagers, because my sense of children, and again, I'm not a child psychologist, but I'm only talking from experience, my sense of it is that your influence over them is paramount, certainly for the first 5 years. It starts to taper off between 5 and 10, 12 maybe. But frankly, once they're teenagers, your ability to seriously influence them is completely trumped by their peers. Is that other people's experience too? That your influence over your children is when they're toddlers, infants, children, and when they're teenagers, they start to look to their peers and perhaps to wider groups like other leaders that they come across, other adults, and they stop looking to your parents. So, yes, you influence them for the first 12 years, but then you make sure, as best as you can, that you put them in a position where they end up with a Christian peer group. And to illustrate this, I remember there was a fellow spoke to me, you know, with great concern, because his older teenage daughter wanted to go off to another church, and he said, you know, I'm committed to this church and I want to support this church, and she wants to go off to another church because all her friends are there. She hasn't got many friends in this church. And you know, I did counsel him and he took the advice. He said, yeah, that's right. I mean, she needs, now that she's a teenager and an older person, she needs peers that will influence her in a positive way towards. So it's just a little bit of a warning, if you do have children, don't make them go to a church if they don't like it. When they're teenagers, I'm talking about, try and encourage them to find a church that they feel comfortable in, that they've got peers, that they're influenced by their peers, because that's what will influence them. So that's sowing the seed for grandparenthood. And then you get to the point, and I know how long I've been a grandparent because my first grandchild was kind enough to be born in the year 2000, so I know that's been about 15 years, and I'll always be able to make that calculation. So I've now got grandchildren that are, used to be 15 in November, down through to little ears. So I think the youngest is about one or two or something like that. So then I had to think about, well, I've tried to sow those seeds, and thankfully, under God, our prayers were answered, and all our children did remain in the faith and did keep our followers of Jesus. And I'll talk about when that doesn't happen as well, but God blessed us, and I can see an effect between the way particularly my wife taught them and influenced them, and then the good influences they had from their peer groups and from young Christian leaders as they became teenagers. They all stayed with faith, and they were all involved in churches. A number of them were in ministry, and the second thing is they did all marry Christian spouses, and that really sets the scene for my grandchildren, because I know that my grandchildren are influenced in ways which I want them to be influenced when I'm not there. And it's interesting, this is another blessing that I've had, is that out of the five groups of grandparents, so us and our four in-laws, if you get what I mean, all but one of them are Christian, are overtly Christian and expressing their faith, and also all of them are still with their original spouses. So I think the couple that aren't churchgoers, and it seems like they're not really people of faith, they are certainly people who have been strongly influenced by that, and so they're committed to each other. And so my 11 grandchildren all have two sets of grandparents who are either strong Christian and who are influencing that way, or in one case are a set of grandparents that still live together. There's been no divorce, and they can still see the connection between being faithful to God and the blessings that flow from that, and being a Christian. It's early days yet, obviously, because my eldest grandchild is only 15 in November. We'll see where that goes, but I keep praying for them. And certainly when I was up in Darwin, I found that quite hard because we were away from all of them. And I remember you lying awake at night many, many nights, just going through their names over and over again, picturing them in my mind, praying for them that they'd be protected, and so on. And that was something I could do. So don't ever forget that you can keep praying for them. Now, I do want to just talk about grandparents who have children, and therefore grandchildren, who their children walk away from faith. And sometimes overtly, sometimes. I have some very dear friends who are extremely committed Christians, and they have three children, and all their children, and I don't know the full story, but all of their children have turned away from faith. And that's bad enough, but it's worse than that, because they have then married non-Christian spouses, in one case I know of, that I hear through my wife, and the spouse is quite specific: I do not want you to talk to your grandchildren, my children and your grandchildren, about anything to do with Christianity or faith or God. That's a complete no-go area. So it's not even just benign, it's quite specific. So how does she, and how does my friend, as a grandfather, how do they relate to their grandchildren in a way which is Christian, without any opportunity to express their faith or to tell them about Jesus, or to even read them Bible stories? And that's a real challenge, and I agree for them, and we stand with them, and you may find yourself in that situation. And I think, again, you do have the power of prayer, and you also have the power of a life well lived, and children are very astute, so they do pick up on why it is that you are who you are and you are what you are, and you behave in certain ways, and they will ask. So out of the mouth of babes and sucklings, they may very well be the way in which your children end up being challenged to come back to the faith that they've walked away from. So that's it's a very hard one, and I'm glad I'm not in that situation. And then, as we saw at the end of the passage, may you see the prosperity of Jerusalem, may you see your children's children, your grandchildren. And there is something about knowing and seeing your grandchildren which connects you with the future, connects you with the past, and more importantly, connects you with a God who put you in that situation. So thoughts on being a grandfather. I'm getting through this fairly quickly, so we may finish earlier. But thoughts on being a grandparent. One of the things I did, particularly when I was doing grandparenting at a distance, and my wife did it too, was we had to figure out ways to be grandparents at a distance. And I suspect that's fairly common nowadays. We, out of our four families, we have two in Sydney, but we do have one in Lightning Ridge, and that's not too far away, but it's a fair drive. And we have another one in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. And so, you know, we have to work out ways. During one of the talks just now, I spent most of the talk out on the Skype. So there's one trick that God's given us, the whole thing of Skype. And kids are pretty technological nowadays. So if they see Pops on the Skype, they know who Pops is and they talk to him. And so last night, little Luke from Lightning Ridge had to get on the phone and ask me, did I really jump out of an aeroplane once? So obviously Joanne had asked that I jumped out of an aeroplane. And as my friend Roger would know, that's something you do on your first appointment course in the Army Reserve. They get you to do a parachute jump. So, yes, I have jumped out of an aeroplane. And he was highly amused by the fact that I didn't hurt myself because I landed in the lake. He was quite relieved by that. But, you know, little things like that, which you can do on even on Skype, obviously you can do that face-to-face, but you can't do that. Oh, sorry, before technology like Skype, it was even hard to do that on the telephone. But now we do have Skype. So we need to get on top of that technology and use it, and the kids relate to it really well. Obviously, if you can go and visit, that's immense relationship. So we had the good fortune to go to Boston for a good 10 weeks or so, and when they were about 2 years ago, and build up quite a close relationship. So now, and then they were back in Australia for a little while. And so now when we get on Skype, we're an unknown quantity. And I think that relationship will continue. They get on with their lives, but they do know that there are these four grandparents, my wife and I, and Al's mum and dad, who love them and care for them and are concerned for them, and it's so important to their emotional well-being. I don't want to get sidetracked by the whole gay marriage issue, but it's the sleeper issue, isn't it, in that whole debate, because children of same-sex marriages, so-called, will often be completely denied that whole connection with their past. And the other thing I've done over the years, and this is a typically Gerberish sort of thing, and not everybody would do this. You might find other ways. I'm not a sports fan at all. I mean, I really couldn't care less who wins tonight out of Canterbury Bankstown and what's the New Zealand team called? The Warriors, I think it is. I really don't care, but I pretend to care because my grandchildren are interested in that. I really couldn't care whether the Western Wanderers win the footy or not. But I go to matches with them because they love it. And so, and it's not a burden. I mean, it's a lot of fun. And so does my wife. We go along with them to football matches and we find interests that they have, which we can have, and we share it with them. Fairly basic stuff, I know, but you need to do that. But what I did was when I was up, and I'll pass these around so you can have a look at them, was I wrote them stories, I wrote them little books. So the first one was a book called The Adventures of Kelvin the Crocodile, and I'll pass it around, and it's based loosely based on Home Alone, you know, the movie Home Alone. And Kelvin was a little crocodile a furry crocodile that I had, and so I wrote them the story and I took photographs. And so that did a couple of things. It amused them and entertained them. It gave them a connection with me. It also gave them a bit of an idea of the context in which I was at the time, because for a lot of the time they weren't able to visit Darwin, although one family did come up at one stage. And so if you're doing grandparenting in a distance, and even if you're doing it close up, you can make up silly things, photos. You might not be as elaborate as making a book, but really it's quite easy once you get on top of the technology. It's quite easy to cut and paste photos and type a bit of a story and then print it off by hitting the booklet button and all that sort of stuff. So it's really quite easy. The True Meaning of Christmas, I did the book on that, and it's essentially, you know, the connection between old St Nick, who was a Christian bishop, and tradition says that that's where the whole Santa Claus thing comes from. Then I tie that into him being a Christian and caring for kids because he was a follower of Jesus, and then segue into the gospel story. And that gives them a sort of a Christian story that they can read. Then the next one was, and this is to connect them with their history. The next one was a story about a guy called Lance Corporal Walter Eli Tapp. I'll go through them. Okay. Walter Eli Tapp was my wife's grandfather, and he served in the 1st Battalion, 1st AIF, and was injured at Pozieres, and so we collected his history and we got photos and we wrote that and we put it all together, and so they know a little bit about someone in their past and connection with their past. I'm a collector of badges, so I've got all my badges right back from primary school days and school days, and I was in the Army Reserve, and anybody in the military loves badges. We love wearing badges and everything, so I collected all my badges and I wrote a book on Grandpa's badges and I told them my story. Now, nobody'd be interested in that. I mean, it's the only person that people are interested in that, me, my kids, maybe my wife, or she tolerates it anyway. You're not interested in my story, but my grandkids are. They think it's a hoot to see my life story told through my badges. So that's another one that I did. Curlin's Hat Adventures, I collect hats from time to time, so they've got that one. And then the other one, I don't know, do other families have these silly sayings that you have, or... you know, responses that you give to your kids whenever they ask a question, like they ask why, and you say, "Don't ask why, because why is a crooked letter, and you can't straighten it," and all those sort of, you know, those things that you say to your kids, and you say them to your kids because your parents said them to you, and possibly their parents, grandparents said to them. So, and all these other stories. So I wrote a book called "Why Fish Don't Have Fingers" and other tall stories from a short grandpa, and that is, it's really quite stupid and quite inane, but you know, kids at the age of 5, 6, 7, and 8 think it's funny, and it builds a relationship with them. And then the last one was a little book I put together when we had the privilege of going to London once. We actually went around and took a picture of everything on the Monopoly board, you know, the Strand and Fleet Street and Trafalgar Square and Leicester Square and Park Lane and Mayfair. And my wife had T-shirts or tops that matched all the colours of those things, and we got pictures, so we put that together to them. So they've actually got a live version of the Monopoly game. And look, it is silly, isn't it? But, you know, it's just a way of building a relationship with your kids on a permanent or an ongoing basis, because you're not with them all the time. And even if they live in Sydney, with people's busy lives, you're not with them all the time. You try and see them as often as you can, but you know, you can't be with them. Well, our experience is they live in Sydney, but they're not in the same suburb, so we don't see them every day of the week. We only see them every week or two. And so that was our way, and you may have to think of other, or you might think of other ways to relate to your grandchildren. And I suppose my prayer for you is that you'll get to the point that your children will think you're wise, and that will probably happen just at the point when their children, your grandchildren, are now figuring out that their parents aren't that wise. It happens at about the same time, doesn't it? And I have found that my children, you know, they know that I'm a flawed person. They know me almost as well as my wife, so they know all my foibles and my inadequacies and my brokenness and my failures. But, you know, they do recognise that after 61 years rolling around, I've picked up something. I've learned something from the Bible that I've read and the many wise teachers that I've sat under. And from time to time, I get back from them that, in fact, yeah, you do know something, Dad. They don't put it in those terms, but by the way they interact with me, I know that they're realising that, as I did with my father, and as no doubt my father did with his father, that they actually have something to gain from their father. And the important thing about that in terms of being a grandparent is that they then start to feed that to their children. And so their children know that there's this older, respected couple, Grandpa and Grandma, Pops is what I get called by one of my disrespectful sons, that there is this older resource in their life, in their world, in the same way as you do in a village community or in a non-Western community. There's this resource, there's this people here, just as God planned, to be older, wiser, to have the privilege of not having the day-to-day care with all the disadvantages, but to be able to love in a way which is unconditional, as parents do, and not have all the strictures of day-to-day stresses and strains, be able to come into people's lives, to be someone that they can talk to. And I particularly notice it with my grandchildren and my wife, that it is clear that for some of the grandchildren, particularly the older ones, you can tell that they know when they're with their grandmother that they can be themselves, that they're safe, that they're, you know, the things that they're going through, they're with grandma and they can talk about it or not talk about it, but it's just a place where I'd use the word safe is what, the way I think about it. They're just comfortable and safe and they're not under any pressure. Thankfully, as grandparents, we're not, in the context I'm in anyway, we're not the day-to-day discipliner of them and the makers of decisions on a daily-day basis about their life, so we can just be there. And, you know, being there, I know that's the name of a movie, but actually I think it's a good Christian principle, that just being there for people. You look at the way Jesus interacted with people. Often he was just there with people. He wasn't really necessarily... he did preach and he did teach and he did encourage and exhort and so on. But when you read the Gospels, mostly he was just there with people. He was at the wedding. He was having... I mean, we ceremonialise the Last Supper. Well, actually, my guess is that Last Supper was a really good meal. I mean, I can sort of picture... Yes, they had the traditional Jewish cup of... cups and so on, and did a little bit of ceremonial stuff, but my understanding and my picture in my mind is that actually Jesus was just there around the table having a really happy, relaxed, good meal with them, and we get snippets of the conversation that relate particularly to what happened after the Last Supper, but actually it was I don't want to say it was just the Last Supper, but in a sense that's what it was. It was just a supper. He was there with them in their normal things of life, enjoying life and being with them. And that's what grandparents can be. We actually don't have a lot of pressure to be a whole lot of other things. We can just be for our grandchildren. And that's the way God wants it. And I hope you all get to see your children's children, your grandchildren. And I hope I've given you something to think about. Are we out of time now?
We are. Okay. All right. Sorry.
We're probably too big a group to have a discussion, but I'm happy to discuss to people on your own.
Would you please thank Philip?